An Oklahoma judge ruled Johnson & Johnson played a role in the current opioid crisis. Professor Lucy Hodder joins me to discuss. This is the UNH Law Podcast. Learn more about the law school and apply by visiting law.unh.edu. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or host and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire. So, Lucy, what exactly was the case that was brought up against Johnson & Johnson?
Well, the case in Johnson & Johnson that was decided in August 26th of this year by a federal district court was one of the first cases that's been tried and decided by a state attorney general's office. And therefore, it's sort of seen as the first of potentially many to come. It was brought by the state of Oklahoma because Oklahoma has seen, much like New Hampshire, an overwhelming impact of the opioid crisis on folks in Oklahoma. And they've seen not only significant increases in addiction, substance use disorder, death, and have also claimed injury that the impact is having on infants who are born exposed to opioids. So the attorney general brought this case, and it's been in litigation for a number of years, thousands of documents, thousands of witnesses, and the court decided Oklahoma's public nuisance law was violated. And because Johnson & Johnson has engaged in a public nuisance, which comes under the criminal code, an abatement was ordered.
And what's that? What exactly does the abatement mean?
Well, the abatement means that Johnson & Johnson will be paying the state $572 million to do what is basically a four-page, very detailed opioid treatment plan kind of document. So the judge not only went into detail about the false and misleading advertising and marketing that the facts warranted his finding around Johnson & Johnson. He also then detailed what he wanted done with the abatement. So took in a lot of facts around, you know, staffing at the medical examiner's office, staffing at Medicaid fraud units, treatment programs, increasing coverage, a whole number and a series of things to try and abate the impact of the opioid crisis and the Johnson & Johnson marketing.
Now, that seems surprisingly low considering the volume of damage. I mean, is it because this is strictly Johnson & Johnson's angle on what's going on with the crisis?
This case was just against Johnson & Johnson and its subsidiaries. Oklahoma was quick to note that it was a small portion of what it was claiming, which was billions of dollars of damages. But Oklahoma has previously settled with Purdue Pharma for about $270 million and Teva for about $85 million. And so they basically were saying in aggregate, they are receiving now dollars to help remedy the impact of the marketing of the pharmaceuticals. Oklahoma, again, it is bringing this case under a public nuisance statute, which may not be the same criteria as other state attorney generals could bring their cases.
Yeah, this seems really interesting, the fact that they're using public nuisance, because that's going to vary wildly from state to state, I'd assume.
It is, although the basic tenets of a public nuisance statute, it's basically when someone does something to interfere with the common use of property. Now, in Oklahoma, it's basically impacting the common use of it can impact someone's health or safety. So there's no direct tie to property, at least according to this judge. Johnson & Johnson, of course, is defending itself vigorously, claims that the public nuisance statute, there is no basis for a claim against them. First of all, they didn't engage in false and misleading advertising and marketing, and that their actions did not cause the physicians to prescribe the drug. There were intervening causes, and moreover, not a single physician testified that, in fact, the marketing is what caused them to prescribe the opioids, according to Johnson & Johnson. They also claimed that the public nuisance law just should not apply to this kind of a case, because public nuisance laws are usually used to claim that somebody's infringing on the public use of property. So let's say, you know, there's somebody polluting into the river that everyone's using. That can be a public nuisance. Or
so a lot more direct.
Exactly. A direct injury to property. Here, the judge said there's a direct injury to safety.
Oh, interesting.
A direct injury to safety based on the marketing and the advertising. The judge really looked into the facts of the marketing and advertising and looked at what kind of tactics Johnson & Johnson used over time to try and influence prescribers to think that prescribing the opioid pharmaceuticals that they were manufacturing was not going to negatively impact patients. And in fact, the FDA had called them on the carpet for a card that basically said theirs was less harmful than others. And so
that really reminds me of old school cigarette advertisements with that.
Exactly. Yes. One of the big issues here is just the emotional impact this has had on every state, including New Hampshire. I mean, New Hampshire's overdose deaths are higher than any other state, the rate of overdose deaths. The rate of prescribing in New Hampshire was almost higher than any other state. Significantly changed now. Our rate of overdose deaths are trending downward from their high in 2017. And 2016. And the number of opioid prescriptions written in New Hampshire has gone way down in terms of the rate of prescribing per person in the state. So clearly there's been an understanding of what kind of impact opioids can have. I think that what the judge was really looking at and went through in rigorous detail was the injury that the prescribing caused, and looked at Johnson & Johnson's activity, which was that they were producing a huge amount of the opioids that were being used across the system, and that, in fact, their own products, not only were they helping to produce the opioids, they were manufacturing their own and distributing their own. And the marketing around that distribution was fairly typical to what you would do in a prescription drug world, going into physicians' offices, using families to help spread the word, you know, talking about how much it reduces pain, that there's not enough prescribed, we don't deal with pain well, and really not giving any indication that it was severely addictive. And so that's what the court really pointed to in claiming this public nuisance. It's almost a false – it is basically a false advertising case wrapped up in a public nuisance statute brought by a state on behalf of all of its inhabitants.
Now, because this is coming through with Oklahoma specifically, does this set a precedent for other states to be able to look to, or does this basically just help Oklahoma for future cases within their state?
So a couple things in response to that. I have not been able to research every state law.
Yeah.
Oklahoma's public nuisance law is certainly broader than others, and I'm sure other states will look closely at their laws to see how closely it ties to property, much like the defense that Johnson & Johnson still holds to in the Oklahoma case. There will also be an appeal. So remember that Johnson & Johnson is absolutely appealing this case.
Oh, yeah, of course. There's no way around that.
Exactly. And so there will be an appeal. I think other states have a whole series of levers that they're trying to pull on these cases, mostly because of the devastating impact on their citizens. I mean, it's death, it's exposure, and it's long-term impact, and it's extremely costly and very difficult to remediate. I mean, look at what we're having in New Hampshire, rolling out a perfect solution to an opioid substance use disorder epidemic is extremely difficult because of the nature of the crisis and the health impact it has and how difficult it is to create sustainable treatment models.
It also spawns off illegal markets where people are no longer able to get those prescribed medicines, so they end up with fentanyl, heroin, and other opioids.
Exactly. And it has opened up a number of pathways for marketing for illegal substances. So other states are looking closely at their consumer protection statutes, which do include variations on false and misleading advertising, their public nuisance laws, and other state statutes that may actually call into question whether or not there was intentional misrepresentation of facts on which professionals or individuals relied and which caused harm that can be remedied by some kind of legal remedy action. Just want to say that the we are just seeing the beginning of the litigation around these matters. There are something like 2,000 additional lawsuits coming down the pike. We've seen the dialogue and the reaction of the Sackler family around the allegations regarding Purdue Pharma. I think we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. And the question is, what will the impact be on the pharmaceutical industry? I was just reading today that the pharmaceutical industry has the lowest approval rating of any participant in the healthcare industry, for sure, and in general, any industry in the United States. And so clearly it's having an impact on public perception. I think that also has to do with costs of prescription drugs. I think when we reflect, we will realize that the pharmaceutical industry also makes life-saving drugs that people rely upon for their life and well-being every day and spend a lot of resources to produce life-saving drugs on which we depend. And so the question really becomes, what kind of partnership do we have as a community and a healthcare delivery system with the pharmaceutical manufacturers to ensure that these type of life-saving drugs can be provided to our community with a degree of safety, a degree of transparency, and an ability to remedy things that do go wrong? There's no possible way you can try and cure all without there being wrongs committed. What we need to be careful of from a policy perspective is bankrupting our manufacturers out of existence.
Right. There's because of a balance there.
Exactly. Because of a wrong that had a really untoward impact. And we see this replay itself over and over in various industries. We also need to figure out, what did we all do wrong in this, not recognizing what was happening to our communities, our prescribers, et cetera. I think everybody is stepping up to the plate and saying, what did we miss? How can we do better? What kind of guardrails do we need to make sure our healthcare delivery is realistic? And when something looks too good to be true, it probably is. So let's figure out how to take on the challenges with a little more transparency and responsibility. Let me just talk about transparency. Yeah. One of the things that is very frustrating is when you have operators and companies in a public delivery system not be accountable publicly for the decisions they make and defend against transparency by claiming their private businesses. And this goes for nonprofit hospitals. This goes for physicians. Obviously, the protection of medical records is critically important. But our healthcare delivery system obviously impacts. If it's gotten so far that marketing a prescription is considered potentially a public nuisance if it results in misleading advertising, understand that the way we treat the healthcare delivery system needs to be radically reviewed, because right now, much of what our delivery system about is not transparent. We don't even know what we pay for services.
Yeah, pricing is an immediate thing that comes to mind. The going to multiple providers is encouraged by payers, but it's not necessarily what the doctor wants. They don't want you going around to 15 different doctors to get the same opinion.
Right. And let's just be very clear. What we pay for healthcare is extremely different from the impact of a potential drug that can cause a lifetime of substance use disorder and all of the ramifications of that. So at least in this case, we have the beginning of a series of lawsuits, this one finding that Johnson & Johnson, in fact, engaged in misleading advertising and marketing around the manufacture and distribution of opioid drugs and painkillers, and claimed it was a public nuisance, despite there being no property involved or at risk in the injury. And so it's an important decision in that respect. It's also the first of the actual decisions that have come out as opposed to settlements. And so we'll see what happens next and where our collaboration, partnership, or lack thereof with our pharmaceutical manufacturers goes from here. I think clearly there's going to be an appeal, and there are good arguments on appeal, and somehow we're going to have to figure it out if we want to move forward into the future with things that are necessarily risky, no matter what we decide. So how do we make sure we're safe when we're participating in that?
Thanks for listening to the UNH Law Podcast. Learn more about us by visiting law.unh.edu or following UNH Law on social media. Be sure to comment and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Spotify. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or host and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire.